Morning show at East Coast. We'd like to welcome the cool scientist, Sean Duke, a journalist. You might see his articles in the Irish Times. He's got a website, Science Spinning, and he's got the Science Stories of the Week. You're very welcome, Sean.
Thanks
for coming into us. Now, let's start off with, do animals hold the key to global organ shortage?
Yeah, organ shortage is a huge thing. This is Organ Donation Week, actually, so people might have seen stuff in the papers about it. And there was a piece that I thought was interesting where they're actually highlighting how we're starting to make progress on this. And what they're doing is they want to transplant organs from animals into humans.
Well, had they tried that before with pigs?
They have. They've tried that, but it's only in the very early stages. They're looking to, what they've done is they've put pig corneas into humans. Now, this is at a very early stage, but the problem with any of these things, they haven't got onto the heart or anything like that, the big organs.
The rejection
is the problem. So if you put an organ in to the body, then within 5 minutes, apparently, the immune system recognizes that as being foreign and starts to attack it. So that's no good at all. But what they have now, of course, in their weaponry, if you like, is this gene editing technology we've mentioned a few times here, CRISPR it's called, and this is amazing stuff because you can cut out things and cut and paste as you like with the DNA. You can do what you like, and it's really precise. So the idea now is that we might be able to use pig organs, hearts or skin from pigs for burn victims, all of this, by essentially cutting out, when the immune system recognizes something as foreign, what you need to do is take out those things that enable it to recognize it as foreign, if you like. And you can do this with gene editing technology. So you will be able to, the theory is, very soon, put an organ from a pig, a heart, in, and because that's been edited, the body, our human body, won't recognize it as a pig organ, and it'll function. Now, at the moment, what they're doing, they're testing, it's controversial, because they're testing this on baboons. So the baboons have been given pig hearts, believe it or not, and they've lived for 6 months, which is pretty good. They want to make that longer, of course. The controversial bit is that some people believe that we should not, under any circumstances, do research on primates. And against that, you would say, well, if it comes down to somebody saving somebody's life that would otherwise die and would be on an organ list, die on an organ list waiting, is it better that we actually do work on the primates? So that's up for debate, and it's very controversial, but this is coming down the track. And if we manage to do it, then, of course, there's an endless supply. You could have a situation where you're actually breeding pigs specifically for organs to be used in medicine, because the numbers are phenomenal. 330 million people get operations each year around the world, so that's a lot. And we never have enough organs.
Right, okay. That's just one of the science stories of the week in the medical area. What about this in research of behaviour? And I mentioned this already, as youngster wouldn't put on their shoes this morning or wouldn't, just wouldn't eat their breakfast and just throw things around and throw a tantrum. They seemingly are the most successful in later life.
Well, I'm delighted to hear it, because I came from a war zone earlier on where I have a pair of twins and they were killing each other and saying various things to mum and dad. So, you think, God, does this mean, as a parent, does this mean they're going to end up in the Mountjoy jail later? Well, actually, according to new research in developmental psychology, which looks at how kids develop psychologically, has found a very interesting link that says, actually, if you're a bit rebellious, if you defy your parents, if you're not very compliant, that actually might be good in the long term. Not maybe good for your parents trying to get you out to school, but good for you. The University of Luxembourg surveyed 100 12-year-olds going back 40 years. So they're now, in their 50s. And they, once they got into their 50s, then they went back to them and they said, right, we want to check on you now, guys. You're 50, whatever, two now. Tell us about your income, your occupation, all of those things. And it turns out, because they had 40 years ago identified the ones that were disobedient, so now they've tracked them 40 years later, and they found that the disobedient ones who resisted authority, gave out maybe to their parents or didn't listen to the teacher, they were doing quite well for themselves. They had more, they'd been in education longer, they'd more top jobs, and they'd more income than their obedient peers. And it wasn't, the researcher said, this wasn't to do with IQ or anything like that. This was actually to do with how they dealt with authority. So
there you are. When the children are having the tantrums, just think they'll be able to keep you in a luxurious nursing home later on. Yeah. They'll be the most successful. What about this woman? This is fascinating. I saw this on television during the week, and I'm glad you have it included this week. It's the woman who doesn't feel pain. Yeah. In fact, she didn't know she was burning herself till she smelt something burning. Was her. On a stove.
Oh, it's an amazing story. It was on the BBC. The woman's name is Jo Cameron. She's 65, yeah. Right? 65, and only recently she found out that there was an issue here to do with she didn't feel pain the way as other people did. She says, oh, yeah, I do. I kind of burn my arms in the oven a lot. I just don't feel the pain when I'm burning. She's getting all of these kind of injuries, of course. And pain is there for a reason, to warn you if there's damage being done, of course, to your skin or whatever. And then, interestingly as well, she says that she virtually never feels anxious. Anxiety is a huge thing in modern society. She doesn't feel anxious. She's forgetful. She never feels afraid. And that's important. I'll mention why in a second. So it was only when she was 65, like this year, that she went in for a hand operation, and the surgeon said, listen, this is going to be sore afterwards. You know, you're going to need painkillers. And Jo said, no, I won't need the painkillers. The doctor said, you will need the painkillers. She said, there's a bit of banter going on, she says, in the theatre. And lo and behold, anyway, she had the operation and didn't need the painkillers. The doctors were amazed. So they sent her down to Oxford University and they did a genetic test there. And they found that she had these genetic mutations that actually meant that she just didn't feel pain like the rest of us. And they asked her about childbirth, obviously very painful for a lot of women. And she said, no, I didn't feel pain. It was a bit strange, but actually quite enjoyable. So that was unusual. And then another thing, she said, yeah, and now that you mention it, actually, I had a very bad hip and I kept on walking on it until I literally couldn't anymore. And it turned out that it was the arthritis. She was riddled with arthritis. But most of us would have felt that pain long before, you know. So now they think that by looking at her genetics, that they might be able to get new therapies that can reduce post-operative pain and accelerate wound healing, because she's faster at healing wounds as well. And also, there's a link. A lot of the anti-pain medications are also antidepressants. There's a link there. You know, they're the same medications, are similar ones. So it could be used to treat anxiety, chronic pain, which is a massive problem in America. You know, the opioid crisis for all these people, that's to do with trying to control pain. Things like PTSD, trauma, mental trauma. So this is a real breakthrough, and there's a great story to it. Jo
exactly.
Cameron.
Well done. And of course, it could be used in palliative care maybe in the future, yeah, as well. So well done, Jo Cameron. But of course, pain is there as a warning to stop you as such. You would end the fire because you'll hurt yourself, but you won't. Now, final one here for today. And I just want to ask you a question. Are there more male politicians than there are female politicians?
I think there are, Declan.
Okay.
Definitely.
Now let's move on to the next story. Boys are bigger spoofers than girls. unrelated to what I was saying. But go on, tell us.
Yeah, okay. So this is a serious study, we have to say. So this is, again, University College London, which is a top university there. They have an Institute of Education. And they decided, let's have a look at this thing of BS, to put it politely, spoofing, as we might call it. And they looked at teenagers, 40,000 teenagers in the Anglo world. So it was Canada and Ireland and Northern Ireland. So it was only in the Anglo world. And they essentially, what they did was they put these mathematical concepts to them, kind of basic maths, and do you understand this, do you understand that? But in there, they set some traps so that, you know, the idea was that the type of person that's tempted to spoof, you set a trap for them because you offer them plausible answers, and if they go for it, then you know, right, they're BSing here, you know? So they set the traps for them, and they found, so they were able to identify the BSers, basically, and they found that there was a personality trait to the BSers. They tended to be the more self-confident ones. They tended to be popular in school. And also the more privileged children were found to spoof more than the underprivileged children.
Really?
So that's all fascinating.
Say upper classy type of stuff. Yeah.
They think it's to do with confidence. And you know, the thinking is, it's only theory at this stage, is that maybe the self-confident child or teenager from the privileged background, with all the confidence and maybe popular in school and all of that, they think, if I do a bit of BSing, I'll get away with it. Whereas the other child who's maybe not as confident thinks they'll be caught out, more likely to be caught out. That's the thinking. But another interesting thing is that there were societal differences, that the Americans, the North American kids from Canada and particularly the US, they, of course, have this very positive culture over there. And they were found to be statistically more prone to the BS than the Northern Irish and the Scots, who were very right down at the bottom in terms of the Anglo world. They were very cautious and didn't. So it kind of taps into international stereotypes, I suppose, but an interesting one.
So should we believe women as well, more than boys, especially upper-class boys?
The upper-class boy, I suppose, the Boris Johnson, am I safe enough saying that? Those types that we're seeing...
Well, have we any evidence that Boris Johnson or Jacob Rees-Mogg is affected by this? Maybe not.
Maybe I'm being unfair. But girls do not spoof as much, according to this study of 40,000 teenagers, as boys. That's not to say that there aren't girls out there who do it. There's always exceptions.
Well, there's probably a little bit of it in us all somewhere along the way. Of exaggeration. But anyway, it's according to this study anyway, boys are bigger liars, basically, than girls. And that's nothing to do with any aforementioned politicians, of course. Right then, thanks very much indeed, Sean, for that. How are things otherwise in the world of science?
Things are going good, yeah. What can I say? I'm working away on different projects, and science is always interesting because there's always new stuff coming up, and it's a bit of a break from the Brexit that we hear relentlessly. I find it more interesting myself now, I have to say.
Very good. Okay, Sean Duke, the cool scientist. You can read his articles in the Irish Times and follow Sean on sciencespinning.com.